We'll be right back with you.
Is about more than just sitting here and talking about women's issues. It's about listening to them
and bringing their opinions to the table and making sure their voices are heard.
Because our lived experiences, our stories, and our voices will help shape the next generation.
Health, wellness, sport, beauty, medical breakthroughs. Healthy Living cares about your well-being. Every week, connect with our experts. You can ask them your questions and get their advice. Join me, Lina Hormoudou, in Washington on Healthy Living, your new health program, right here on Voice of America.
Straight Talk Africa streams live every Wednesday on Facebook. You can watch our show there and leave a comment. Now let's look at what's on tap for next week's program.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, the United States, Britain, and Norway are praising South Sudan for forming a unity government. President Salva Kiir agreed to revert to the original 10 states plus 3 administrative areas, and opposition leader Riek Machar has been sworn in again as the first vice president. Will the new government manage to end years of conflict that has killed thousands of people and displaced millions? South Sudan in transition on the next Straight Talk Africa.
And today we are discussing education for creating bridges between Africa and the United States of America. Our guests are Wara Erisheikh, co-founder and CEO of Birthright Africa, Sidiq Traore, president and founder of Distance Education for Africa, Ernest Obobisa, vice president of the Ghana chapter of the American Field Service, and in New York, we are joined by Karim Williams, a Birthright Africa alumnus. I have to say, ladies and gentlemen, that I'm profoundly honored and exceedingly humbled to have the opportunity to host the four of you for the first time on Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you.
Thank you.
No, you're most welcome. Wala, yes. Talk to us about what you have learned out of this project so far.
What I have learned is that that intuition that happens for many of us growing up outside of the continent to want to explore our self-identity and understand where we are, who we are, and where we come from is something that all of us share. And so it's been a privilege for me to be part of this movement, and we're really excited about bringing everyone to this work and to have more future global leaders and entrepreneurs like Karim, mm-hmm. who has expressed to me and many others that they will be connecting continuously into the future to build on what they've learned and to ensure that they are part of the Africa future. And so we are proud that we will be creating the next generation of global leaders and entrepreneurs that are proud of their African heritage, confident in their innovative innovations, and truly connected.
I mean, Wala, you definitely deserve credit for what you are doing.
Thank you.
But what really triggered it? Talk to me from the deepest, the better part of the bottom of your Sudanese heart and soul. Because a lot of Africans, when they come to America,
yes,
they first of all deal with what I would characterize as bread and butter issues.
Mm-hmm.
They deal with what is considered here domestic politics to deal with kitchen table issues.
Right.
What made you venture into that very important area, really?
Well, it's funny enough you say that. I came here as a young child at the age of 10, and for me, it was that immigrant hustle mentality as a continental African from Sudan.
And you were a child of a diplomat.
Yes, I was a child of diplomats. So I had a sense of the world and access to it. But when you come to America, you find out you are this other thing called black.
As an African. And what does that mean?
And what does that mean? And you're not being taught in school what it means. And so you start learning at the age of, you know, sort of your teens, definitely by your 20s, because you start feeling some of the microaggressions. And so I was going through that challenge and realizing I don't know my history. Mm. I don't know African-American history. I don't know African history. And so I needed that journey for myself. And, you know, I was in the finance industry because I was thinking about just making money.
Yes.
And making sure I was comfortable in America.
To be perhaps a member someday of Wall Street.
I was on Wall Street. I was already there. And I thought that's where I needed to stay. But yes. Then this other calling about really understanding the core of who I am and realizing education was truly my passion. I had to make that shift and learned about, you know, the idea to start Birthright Africa and said, this is my calling. And so that was 15 years ago. We've been now operating for 5 years. And one of the things I also saw at that time is that there's not that many of us in leadership and entrepreneurship positions. African-descended people are only 2% of the population of managers, owners, and leaders of African descent. Mm-hmm. I see that on a day-to-day basis when we're the only one or two people in a room. I knew others. And part of that creates a sense of doubt.
Missing in action in boardrooms,
yes,
around America.
Yes, and you have to have a real strong core sense of identity and confidence and pride in who you are. So, but if you're not learning that at school, if you may not be learning that at home because your parents are dealing with the kitchen issues, then where do you get that? The education system, the nonprofit world can provide a source of connection, and that's what we're doing at Birthright Africa. And so we're committed to increasing that number, that percentage of global leaders and entrepreneurs with this exposure to both the history but also the innovative future, so that our young people are forever connected to it and become these leaders and entrepreneurs.
Very interesting. What about you, Siddiq?
How did I start, you know, distance education for Africa?
Yeah, I realized that you were at one time associated with the African virtual universities.
Well, at some point I worked for the World Bank, and the World Bank sent me to Africa, and I've traveled across Africa. I traveled in 40 countries in Africa, and since I'm an educational, I saw all the issues, all the difficulties.
What seemed to be the common denominator?
Well, first of all, lack of access to resource. Training, lack of staff development. So when I go to university, I work with many universities, including Kenyatta University.
Right.
When I started D Africa, I started with teaching English using e-books. I went to 10 countries in Africa, telling them, listen, we want to bring innovation in teaching and learning in Africa. Mm. Let's use e-books to teach English. From Mali, Senegal, to Guinea, to all the way to Nairobi, Kenya, no university at that time was teaching using e-books, none. So I told them, you know, e-books is really magical, because we have a lecturer here in Washington on 16th Street who she's just sitting in her living room teaching people, and she could even make comment on certain e-book in Africa. I said, it's magic. Let's change, you know, things in Africa. I went to one university. They showed me a room full of books, English books, up to you know, old-fashioned books. And I said, let's forget these books. Let's go e-books. We started like that. And then from that, we trained some of the lecturers on how to incorporate ICT in the classroom. So we really changed life in Africa. And then we continue from English to ICT to cybersecurity. We offer cybersecurity. When I was in Nairobi in 2014, cybersecurity banks were losing 2 billion Kenya shilling per year for fraud. So we offer that courses. We increase awareness. And then we started this scholarship project, which was now our flagship. So what has happened the result, every year I go to Africa to do a graduation ceremony in various countries.
Very interesting.
When people tell me, you know, what these courses have, of, you know, happened to them, the door opened to them. Let me just give you a perfect example. Local government and rural development, for instance, in some countries, they need training because they have lots of projects.
Yeah.
So some of the staff have never taken project management and planning in their life.
Any
so,
particular reason why governments, for example,
because
do not provide
limited,
that?
Limited fund.
They limited don't have, funds?
They don't have. They
when
don't
you
have
the government elite driving some of the most expensive, for example, vehicles.
Exactly. You really know.
But they buy houses in Europe,
yes.
In North America.
I agree with you.
They send their children
yes,
to very expensive European American schools.
Yeah.
But not at home.
Yes.
And
no.
You talk about funds?
This is what they talk about, fund.
Some is it of a them, question perhaps of priorities?
Well, it could be in specific countries. So that's only one example. You know, so they work with rural areas they, you know, to develop projects. And they need, they don't have formal training. Some of them have never had any formal training.
Mm.
But taking our courses help them to manage properly the project. You take Minister of Education, for instance. In Minister of Education, you have some people who are coordinating staff development and performance managers.
Mm.
But what kind of issues are there? You see in the Minister of Education, low morale, you have limited resources, and you have, you know, management. It's not the best style.
Limited resources, but you have, again, you have the elite, for example, even going for medical checkups.
Yes, I agree with you.
In Europe, in North America,
yes,
without caring about providing that same infrastructure.
Yes, yeah.
But for the less fortunate people.
Yes. No, I agree. I agree with you. You know, that's the case. But our courses are open to everyone.
Mm.
We have unemployed, we have priests, we have from CEO, we have professor, university professors.
They are
taking
open for everyone.
It's
again,
open for everyone.
But I said that you will run probably into some kind of digital divide.
Yes.
Because let's face it, look at the infrastructure.
Yes.
In order for somebody to be part of your experience, they need to be in a neighborhood, for example, which provides electricity.
That's true.
Correct?
Yes. Yeah. But
so can you imagine what a percentage of those people that you are supposed to be helping do not really have access?
Yes. But that's really where we reach. I could tell you we have some courses in some rural areas. You will be, you know, surprised. There is a city in Kano, it's 500 kilometers from Bangi.
Mm.
There was a young man there, he has a satellite dish. He's never taking online courses.
Mm.
Most of our students have never taken online courses.
Mm.
So we were able to reach those areas with our courses. So there are challenges, of course, I agree. But if I tell you the impact of what we've done, basically, I could give you a project management, for instance. There have been this young guy in Kenya. His name is John Kialo. He has no idea about how to manage projects. So he took our courses, project management, and now became a project manager of a construction company. And now he's caring. He could take care of himself now. That's only one. But we have individuals taking our courses, but ministries, and, you know, taking also our course, as well as the Minister of Local Government, I was just mentioned, Minister of Education taking our courses. We have, in some countries, all ministries taking our courses. So it's been, we are bringing education to people who, you know, otherwise will not have access to those courses.
What would you say is the single most important decision that you have made so far?
The most decision I have made so far is, Shaka, not to give up, to persevere, to continue, to push, to think about people in Africa who need education.
Mm.
And when I was in Dakar, I do the graduation ceremony every year. I go to different countries. Mm. Last year in Dakar, they gave me this big painting of the baobab tree in Africa.
Yes,
they called me, Siddiqui, you are the baobab of Africa in education. I was named one of the top 100 most influential people online in Africa.
Tell us about that.
Well, what we have, they have selected people who have made a difference in online, in workplace places.
And who is behind that selection?
The eLearning Africa is a big company, this organization, you know, selection.
Based where?
Where
is it based?
They are based in Germany, but they are in Africa every year.
Okay.
eLearning Africa conducted that. And then I was selected among 100 most of
years.
So it was just a big honor for me to be able to have made a difference in education in people's life.
What would you say is the single most courageous decision that you have also made?
Well, the single most courageous decision is not to fear. When I started promoting DE Africa, I left Senegal to go to Guinea-Bissau.
Mm-hmm.
From Guinea-Bissau, I crossed the border to come to Guinea. When I reached a town one day, I had meeting plan because of, you know, I wanted to travel in all these countries.
Mm-hmm.
I reached to a city, a small town in Guinea-Bissau at the border. I missed the transport, the bus. I have to wait for the next day. But they told me, well, you could take a motorbike to cross the border.
Mm.
Because those people, you know, the borders are porous, you know, so you could. And they told me it's difficult because there are rivers.
Yes.
And I said, okay, I'm ready to go because I came to help Africa. So I just said, okay, let's go. And they put my suitcase on this motorcycle.
Mm.
We reach a river. The river has crocodiles. And I said to myself, should I get on this, you know, canoe to cross?
Mm.
What about if the canoe flip? But Shaka, with my determination to help Africa with education, nothing could have stopped me to go.
Congratulations.
I went and I crossed. So, you know, I think that was one of the most courageous, you know, thing. And on that journey, when I reached Guinea, from Guinea to Dakar, I took another car. And I faced the first challenge, another challenge there, because crossing another bridge, and I have to help them to turn. There was just a small board, and then there is a chain you have to turn so that it moves, the bridge moves. So those two experiences were the most challenging thing in bringing education to Africa.
Definitely required courage.
Yeah.
What about finally, what you would consider to be the single most regrettable decision so far?
With distance education for Africa?
Yeah.
I don't really think I have that much regret, you know, because for me, every single day, when people tell me, Siddiqui, you have opened my life, you have given me job skills, yes, it keeps me going. It keeps me going. So I have given my life to this education, to this organization, and I think God has helped me to push it and to get this scholarship, which we are giving to people in Africa.
Your decisions have really, in some way, shape, or form, helped to put some smile on some people's faces.
Yes, I agree.
Is that a very difficult thing to do, especially when we talk about the African leadership, where you find that some of them end up, in fact, putting miseries on the faces of millions of our people, their decisions, the decisions that they make. And yet you have an Africa that is probably the wealthiest in terms of resources, on this planet Earth. And yet, the Africans are the poorest. They can't even guarantee 3 meals a day for their families.
Yes. Yes. No, I agree with you. It's really, it's a question of allocating resources to people, because access to education is very difficult. Because, as you know, if you look at access to higher education, how many people, what's the percentage? It's very low. Africa has the lowest in terms of accessing to adequacy.
And so, even then, when you talk about that type of education, you are not even talking about whether, in fact, it is quality education.
I agree. You know, so what people are telling me, it's like, Siddiqui, you bringing quality education to Africa and it's opening door, because our courses are market oriented. Mm. That's really one of the best things with the Darden Business School. And this university has given us this over 6,000. Our dream is to reach the entire African continent. So far, we are in 48 countries. We are missing only 6 countries. Mm. And by the end of the year, we're going to cover the entire, we'll have students in the entire 54 countries in Africa. We have volunteers who are social media contacts, WhatsApp people. So I want to thank all of them for making an impact in the community and informing people and telling people, this is what we've done. Distance Education Africa has given me this training opportunity. They've been sharing it. So that's why also every year I go to Africa and we celebrate.
Very good.
We take pictures, we take videos, and we share the entire continent.
Thank you for your service so far. Ernest, what about you? What have you learned so far? And in fact, you belong to another generation.
What I learned so far with my AFS background, that showed me how giving other people opportunities to do whatever they want to do in terms of skills. Talking in this way, as back home in Ghana, that when someone have the skills to kind of like develop in a society, you don't get that chance to kind of like do because you are not good in theory. Mm. But when you're good in practicals, it's very, very difficult for someone or an institution to employ you or to give you a chance to prove to them that you also can do it. But when I came to America, I kind of like learned that they gave everyone opportunity to kind of like do. In terms of like in Ghana, they don't give much attention to, in Africa, they don't give much attention to technical school who are very kind of like good in skills. So I learned in America that they like give everyone opportunity to kind of like express himself, do whatever you can do to kind of like help like the organization or whatever you find yourself. So I've learned a lot that no matter what you are and the skills that you have, you can also do it.
Unfortunately, my friend Ernest, time, as they say, is not our best ally. And in the Studio 47, there is no democracy sometimes. If the producer says go, you have to go. Yes. On that note, our guests today were Wala El-Sheikh, Siddique Traore, Ernest Obubisa, and in New York, Kareem Williams joined us. Thanks to our audience for tuning into Straight Talk Africa. In the meantime, get better, not bitter, Africa, and please remember to keep the African hopes alive.